with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour. It's the 14th day of January 2011. I don't think I've said anything. I don't think I've said 2010 since the beginning of 2011. So far, so good, right? And it is Friday on the front porch on the horn. Everything's fair game. Of course, it always is. But we can be a little more lighthearted. We can be, and God knows, we need a giggle here and there. If anybody's got a giggle. And the following is not a paid commercial announcement. I figure that gives this just a little bit more weight. Speaking of giggling, my taste buds are right now. I picked up just on a lark, because I figured Agnes and the girls would go gaga over it. But it turns out I did too. I picked up a bag of Popcorn Indiana Dark Fudge chocolate chip kettle corn today. Bear in mind, the headquarters for Popcorn Indiana are, in fact, in Englewood, New Jersey, but who's counting? Darn, this is good. I mean, this is silly good. This makes you feel like a 5-year-old good. I just tasted it and lost my mind. So I don't know if this stuff is anywhere near you, but it's well worth it. They got a million other flavors too, but come on, chocolate popcorn, chocolate fudge drizzled popcorn, salty sweet kettle corn drizzled in chocolate fudge with little mini chocolate chips sprinkled into it. Oh, please. This is just a delight. Popcorn Indiana Dark Fudge Chocolate Chip Kettle Corn. And it's everything it sounds like. And see, I really have them right here in front of me. If I didn't have a bag of Dark Fudge Chocolate Chip Kettle Corn from Popcorn Indiana, I couldn't do this. Oh, God, those smell good. Pardon me while I mute the mic and just have dinner. No. You know, they're rich. Just a little handful satisfies, because you got the salt going, you got the sweet going, you got the crunch going. It may well be the perfect snack. So keep an eye out for them. Let's see. Their website is popcornindiana.com. Their website is not englewoodnewjersey.com, but it's popcornindiana.com. And I think I have a new problem. I think one could have worse problems, but no, I've definitely got a problem. This stuff's good. And I sent a bag. I bought two bags. Kept a bag back here because back in the rest of the mansion, it's like locusts. And I sent a bag into the back of the mansion, and all I heard were giggles. That's what I did. I heard giggling. Oh my God! Oh no! Oh! Foodgasm? Is that the word I'm looking for? Yeah, I think so. Crispy, sweet, crunchy, and indulgent. Every bit of it. So if it's anywhere near you, Dark Fudge Chocolate Chip Kettle Corn from the folks at Popcorn Indiana, headquartered in Englewood, New Jersey. By the way, they tell me on the bag, zero trans fat, gluten-free, and 100% natural. Now, I'm not trying to get them to advertise with us. I'm not trying to, no. But I'm going to follow them on Facebook and send them a tweet. Because when people do things that are good, it's worth mentioning. Oh, let's see. Ingredients here. Well, no trans fats, but that's not to say no fat. Oh, there's a lot of fat. Ingredients, sugar, popcorn, canola oil, palm kernel oil, palm oil, cocoa processed with alkali, well, why not, non-fat dry milk, chocolate liquor, cocoa butter, salt, soy lecithin, and vanilla. Contains milk, soy, produced in a facility that uses milk, soy, peanuts, and tree nuts. Gluten-free and kosher. What's not to like? So if you see it, and if you're a chocolate head, this you want. No, really. And you know, this being Friday on the front porch, I thought this would be the appropriate time to tell you about them. PopcornIndiana.com. If you do like it, it wouldn't hurt if you said, hey, Bob Kincaid told me about these things. You never know. We might one of these days run across somebody who does want to advertise, and then I can stop with the nifty, thrifty 250 stuff. But speaking of the nifty, thrifty 250, we are making real headway. We've gotten almost halfway there. We are in need of 26. We are in need of 26 members of the Nifty Thrifty 250 to close out this week's fundraising at our needed level of financial support for this second week of January. And the reason I'm doing it on a week-by-week basis is because I found out through the course of the last several years that if I just mention it once in a while, things dry up in a hurry. So if we go on a week-by-week basis, $650 a week, that's what totals out to the $2,500 it takes. Yeah, 4 times 6. Well, okay, not 6. Okay, what is it, 625? Is my math off? 4 times 6 is 24? Yeah, 625. My bad. But if we do it this way, maybe we actually meet fundraising goals. And remember, when you join the Nifty Thrifty 250, which is supposedly 250 people contributing $10 a month, then that works out to about less than 5 cents per hour of broadcast, which ain't exact. Well, there's not a lot of less than 5 cents per hour, per pound, per ounce, per nothing in this country, but the horn still is. So between now and 9 p.m. Eastern Time, we're looking for 26 people to do $10 a piece and help us reach this week's fundraising goal so that next week we don't start with a hole. The whole purpose of this, see how that works? Homonyms, I guess those are. The whole purpose of this is to not spend any part of 2011 in a hole. There's another unit. The whole purpose. Right. We want to stay in the black. That's the goal. Because it makes things easier to do here. It makes it easier to get the program out when we're not sweating the bills. I'm not worrying about stuff getting turned off. Because we do worry about stuff getting turned off. So if we can get 26 people to join in on the Nifty Thrifty 250 for the month of January, we will have reached our weekly fundraising goal. Cool? Yes, I thought so. Programming announcements. Another reminder. Tune in tomorrow, Saturday, and I realize with podcasting and stuff, tomorrow has widely varied meanings, so let me be more specific. Tune in Saturday, the 15th of January, 2011. Tune in Saturday, the 15th of January, 2011, at 2 p.m., and we will have a live audio stream of the memorial service for Judy Bonds coming to you live from the conference center at Tamarack in Beckley, West Virginia. You want to hear this. You really do. The lineup is simply amazing. Let me see if I can call that up real quick. Because when you see this, let's see, here we go. Yeah. Here's the lineup as it is presently expressed. The Reverend Jim Lewis, one of the best ministers of whom I have ever been aware, and an Episcopal priest who has been punished for his social activism by his church. The Reverend Jim Lewis will lead the invocation. The eulogy will be given by Vernon Haltom, now the director of Coal River Mountain Watch. Then Kathy Matea will sing. Then words will be offered by the likes of Denise Jardina, Judy's daughter Lisa Henderson, Mary Lynn Evans, the producer and director of the brilliant documentary Coal Country, Janet Keating, director of Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, will offer some words. Julian Martin from Christians for the Mountains will be there. Former director of Coal River Mountain Watch, Janice Neese, will speak. Yours truly will speak. Larry Gibson, the keeper of the mountains, will speak. Bill Price, the environmental justice coordinator in Appalachia for the Sierra Club, will speak. And Debbie Jarrell, who was so instrumental in Pennies of Promise and getting a new Marsh Fork Elementary School built, or in the process of being built, Debbie Jarrell will speak. She's with Coal River Mountain Watch as well. A Native American blessed passing will be offered by Matt Sherman. T. Page Dalporto, who has been on this program, will offer a song. Bo Webb will speak. Goldman Environmental Prize winner Maria Gano will speak. John Johnson will speak. Andy Mahler will speak. Or he will sing. He will sing. Kathy Matea will speak. Our good friend Jeff Biggers, as well as Chris Hill, will speak. Chuck Nelson will speak. Jen Osha, whom you have heard, her music, will speak. The Reverend Alan Johnson. It's Alan Johnson who's with Christians for the Mountains, by the way. Alan Johnson will speak, offer an inspiration. Kathy Matea will sing, and it will all be wrapped up again by the Reverend Jim Lewis. It's going to take a little while. You want to be around for this. And if you want to see it as opposed to just hear it, it will be live at the Horns Ustream channel. And I'm told by John Fox, who has continued to work intrepidly on getting things back to normal on the website, John Fox tells me that he expects to have our Ustream player up on the static page at headonradionetwork.com, so you can go there and get the video. You can also go to ustream.tv if there's any issue. Ustream.tv and just search for The Horn, one word, T-H-E-H-O-R-N, and find it that way. I think it's going to, there won't be a dry eye in the place, but by the same token, there's going to be a lot of laughter, I think. I think there's going to be a lot of smiles, a lot of fond remembrance, and a lot of determination going forward. Apparently, I've tweaked some taste buds. Kathy in Arizona says, Bob, you should be arrested for making our mouths water as you describe the chocolate chip popcorn. You can get some, too. It's yummy, I tell you. I promise. This from Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist. Thanks, Bob. Over the past 22 days, I've been running 2 miles 3 times a week. I've been doing yoga every day and trying to watch my diet. I'm on the warpath to drop 25 pounds, and your chocolate salty popcorn ain't helping. I say this with a grin. Have a good one. I'll try to call in later. I look forward to hearing from you, Joe. And hooray for you doing all that exercising and stuff. I'm glad to see other people are making good use of their time as well. I consider good use of my time sitting around munching dark fudge chocolate chip kettle corn, crispy and sweet, crunchy and indulgent, with no trans fat, but lots of fat. Whoa, it's good. I mean, no kidding. And Marty, always a ray of sunshine, says, be warned that canola could be a product of Monsanto. Oh, God, it may have, for all I know, the canola was grown with the gene from the stomach of an aardvark in it. But the chocolate kind of outweighs it. I mean, I'm just saying. So we've got that. So that's, you know, that's a little kickoff for Friday on the front porch. I had an email in from our dear friend Maura. She just sent a note along saying, Bob, I just wanted to drop you a short note to say how very happy I was to hear that you and the whole family are going on the Progressive Voices cruise. or that referred to by Fancy last night as the lib boat. I like that, the lib boat. Morris said, I don't know who it was that made that arrangement for you, but I'd like to thank them. You and your family have devoted so much of your lives to the horn, you deserve a vacation. Honestly, Bob, I could not be happier for all of you. Thank you, Morris. Thank you very kindly. And we're looking forward to it. This is birthday, Christmas, anniversaries, and the honeymoon that Agnes and I never got all rolled into one. And I expect it to be really, really special, and there's going to be a lot of special, wonderful people on that ship. It's not a boat. It's a ship. My father would be very upset with me. Boats have oars. This is a ship. The only boat that doesn't have an oar that's still a boat is a U-boat, and it goes under the water. We don't plan on going under the water. Going on the Progressive Voices cruise, it's so many people to meet. Do you have any idea how silly excited I am to meet Mike Malloy? I'm just giddy. Because, you know, we've never set eyes on each other. Talked to each other a lot, communicated back and forth, just like any other listener. Been listening to him since 1987, driving back and forth to work at CNN. Driving home from work at CNN at night, listening to him. Chasing the WLS signal down on the Skywave at night years ago. No, I'm the whole ride would be worth it just to get to meet Mike. But so many others are going to be there. Robert Kennedy, I think Mike Papantonio, Mike Farrell, Shelley Fabrace, Corey Harrison, just Hal Sparks. A real list of genuine luminaries from the liberal broadcasting world, all in one place. Shh, don't tell the right wingers. It'd be devastating. I will stay far away from the rails. We're going to find like a crane and a winch, and Agnes, since we're going to be in the tropics, Agnes will dip me every morning in an entire vat of SPF, SPF 1028. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. And yes, as Ron noted last night, I have a feeling somewhere along the way there will be drinks in coconut shells with umbrellas sticking out at the top. Me, I'm kind of getting myself ready for it all, especially because this just seems so appropriate. I'm getting myself ready for it with my favorite wintertime song, my absolute favorite wintertime song, and this is it. Because the lyrics are so appropriate. Just listen.
Everything seems to be wrong.
is almost non-existent at this point. I have a dysfunctional fin. My fin is so low. But you know what? That's going to change. That's going to change. And I've got a real history with that song. All the way back, Jesus, I was 21 years old. Whew, let's not do the math. And in the house where we lived during college, they would never turn up the heat enough to keep frost off the freaking window panes in winter. And so we would sit around listening to this, just sort of trying to pretend we were warm during the depths of January and February and such like. Yeah. So, I'm stoked. I am so absolutely psyched. And when I got the note and got the news and got the call, I walked out and in my best hangdog look, I looked at Agnes and said, honey, what's the matter? This many years she can tell what's wrong. What's the matter? Well, honey, I got some news. What? And her blood pressure. It was really mean of me. And then I told her, and she did the Agnes happy dance. The Agnes happy dance is a beautiful thing to behold. It's half 9-year-old Girl Scout striking her first, making her first fire, and half full grown woman turned loose in Neiman Marcus naked with a credit card. It's really, really fun. And then we sprung it on the kids, and it was all of that all over again. This has been an act of extreme kindness and generosity that not only will not soon be forgotten, will not ever be forgotten. So that week, I don't know exactly how it's going to all shake out, but we will be gone from February the 4th to February the 12th. The 12th is a Saturday, so we will be back on the air on Valentine's Day, Monday, February the 14th, 2011. Is Monday? Really? Is that Valentine's Day? Let's have a quick look-see. Yeah, Monday, February the 14th. We'll be back. So our return to air after our little sojourn in the sun will be Valentine's Day, which is equally appropriate. 24 minutes past the hour on this Front Porch Friday. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. We're having just a lovely little conversation, good time, wrapping up the week, and a very painful week it's been. You know, we might go back into the fetid right-wing swamp again tonight. Who knows? It may be necessary. But right before the show began, I couldn't help noting an email rolling in from the New York Times News Alert folks. News Alert! Republican National Committee selects Rents Priebus of Wisconsin as chairman. Really? And I don't even know if his name's really Rents Priebus. It's R-E-I-N-C-E-P-R-I-E-B-U-S. It may be Reince Priebus or Reince Priebus or Reince Priebus. The New York Times didn't provide a pronouncer. More's the pity. But Rents Priebus? Really? It's either a name out of a Barbara Cartland novel or some sort of parody of Gone with the Wind or... No, I know what it's from. Yeah, this. Hold on. Yeah, it sounds like something from this.
Your breathing has become erratic. A torg for your thoughts?
Elder, are you content with me?
Of course. Why would I not be? Now, I would like to enter my Starface.
Let us suppose for some reason my life functions ceased. What would you do?
I would incinerate your carcass in the tradition of Obadiah the Obtuse and put it in a clean, dry place.
Would you find a new Geneto mate to bring to our Gus chamber and propagate?
My most precious one. I would collapse. I would draw the shades, and I would live in the dark. I would never get out of my slar pad nor clean myself. My fluids would coagulate, my cone would shrivel, and I would die, miserable and lonely. The stench would be great.
Oh, Beldar, you have made me very happy.
Yes, I know. Good night.
That's it exactly. Has anybody asked, where's Rents Priebus from? If you ask him and he says, France, we come from France, we'll know I was right. Rents Priebus? Rents Priebus of the Canadian Mounted Police. Rents Priebus? We're going to have to say Rents Priebus for the next 2 years? Oh, this ought to be fun. He was elected after Michael Steele threw in the towel when people started screaming, no! And I'm going to miss Michael Steele because you got to admit, Michael Steele was fun. But a couple of years of having a man with dark skin running the Republican Party was really more than the Republican Party could probably stand. It was just too much. Kind of like G.O. Proud, the fiercely, staunchly, weirdly, disgustingly conservative outfit that happens to be gay, that wants to go to CPAC conference in D.C. this year, and they want to be a sponsor and stuff. And the weirdos from the religion industry right wing have said, no! And flipped out and said, if the homos are coming, we're not going to go to CPAC. You know, people like Tony Perkins. Norman! Yes, Mother Bates. Rents Priebus. Yeah, I was walking through the studio the other day, and I stubbed my toe on the corner of the broadcast desk, and I fell flat on my Rents Priebus. Maybe it was the planet that Jim Kirk went to kiss that green woman. What is this kissing? Rents Priebus. But there was something... There was something interesting in the actual New York Times story. It starts out and says, the Republican National Committee selected a new chairman on Friday with Rents Priebus of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Now, Rents Priebus of Wisconsin surviving 7 contentious rounds of balloting. Did they have women in, like, skimpy swimsuits carrying the... Round six. To succeed Michael Steele, as party officials expressed a desire for new leadership, you can just sort of infer white between new and leadership, to prepare for the 2012 presidential election. Mr. Rents Priebus and his faithful dog Snorblat, who broke away from Mr. Steele's inner circle to run against him, pledged to pay off the committee's $21 million debt and strengthen state parties across the country to build upon the Republican victories in the midterm elections. Mr. Rents Priebus and his faithful goldfish Flute received 97 votes from the committee. Did you catch that, though? I'm sorry. It's going to be a long 2 years. Rents Priebus! If I'd said Rents Priebus when I was 5 years old, I would have been sitting around with a bar of Octagon soap in my mouth. I don't know what you think you just said, young man, but by God, we'll make sure you never say it again! Actually, Mother never would have said, by God. Rents Priebus. Is it a floor wax? Is it a dessert topping? Rents Priebus? No, there is something in here, though. Pledge to pay off the committee's $21 million debt. Well, that's just a matter of going around and kissing a little right-wing butt, and the money will just rain down. It'll just rain down like a torrent out of a mighty sewer, because that's what Republican funding is. That's what political money is, a mighty sewer. It just happens that they've got a bigger pipe running out of a bigger cesspool than we do. But this was the part that kind of went, whoa. Strengthen and will strengthen state parties across the country to build upon the Republican victories in the midterm elections. Let me repeat that. And strengthen state parties across the country to build upon the Republican victories in the midterm elections. Have we ever... heard anything like that before? Strengthen state parties across the country? Why, yes. Yes, we have. We used to call it, before we got rid of the guy who invented it, the 50-state strategy. Remember the 50-state strategy? The strategy that actually helped put Barack Obama in the White House? That Rahm Emanuel hated so much? The 50-state strategy? That might have helped prevent the onslaught of November 2010, but we didn't want to... No, we can't be doing that. We want to go back to the old losing style. Thank you, Tim Kaine. I tell you what. No, the Repiglicans, as Boss Man Wayne noted long and long ago, never take a year off. There is no such thing as an off year for the Republican Party. They go at it hammer and tongs night and day. While we have little infights about whether or not we need to put our party resources in Illinois or New York. And except for Howard Dean, nobody ever said, you know what we might want to do? We might want to at least open an office in Jackson, Mississippi and Birmingham, Alabama. At least have an office in Columbia, South Carolina. Because there are Democrats down there who like to feel like the National Party actually cares whether they're there or not and would give them a little bit of support, maybe a yard sign here, a bumper sticker there. But that's okay, because Rince Priebus and his faithful ocelot, Floorblatt, are going to have themselves a right-wing 50-state strategy come 2012. Because they've still got a majority to solidify and a Senate to take. I think it's a fairly safe bet at this point that Godzilla from Wasilla will not be the presidential nominee of the Republican Party, but that doesn't mean that the others aren't just as equally crazy. Like Tim Pawlenty. What? Former governor of Minnesota, who says he's going to repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and drive them homosexual soldiers and sailors and Marines and airmen and women, drive them back into the closet where they belong. Jim, I'm as floored by this name as it. What? Rince Priebus, says Jim. I thought that Dirk Diggler was it in Boogie Nights. What is this name? Political porno? Well, if the Republican Party's doing it, it probably is political porno. And yes, correction in from Marty, it was Christopher Pike who kissed the green woman, not James Kirk. James just spent the entire rest of the franchise trying to find him a green woman to kiss. Rince Priebus. You gotta admit, it ain't gonna be no humdrum life for the next 2 years. About 25 minutes before the hour, the lines are open for Friday on the front porch. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, of course, 304-658-3333, and we will go straight play to the phones and see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so we'll be sailing on the high seas, huh? Not me, I'm not going, but that's exciting.
Yeah, I'm already working on my yarr.
Shut the hell up. Well, that's going to be, are they going to Barbados? Where are you going?
No, the itinerary calls for leaving Fort Lauderdale, going to Grand Turk, and then somewhere, and then I think we come back via Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands, and then the Bahamas.
Oh, the Bahamas, right. Oh, I really like Fort Lauderdale, I have to say. It's a nice place. Well, it used to be a nice place.
I haven't been there in a couple of decades, and the time I spent there a couple of decades ago, frankly, I don't remember very well.
Well, it's like Hollywood, which is a kind of, sleazy beach, but it's kind of fun. Anyway, that sounds like a good time. So, what, you're dragging a whole clan, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Shut up. Wow.
And I was told to, so,
Well, no. Hey, I'm sure.
And I would have felt kind of funky going by myself.
Well, no, I'm sure Agnes is well looking forward to this one, huh?
Oh, you have no idea.
Oh, my God. No, I can I can imagine. She's probably like, yeah.
Oh, she's already figured out where our cabin is and the quickest route to the spa and the manicure and the pedicure.
Right. No, I mean, she needs to take full advantage of all. Yeah, I mean, it should be so much fun. What is it? What cruise line is it?
Holland America. And as far as I can tell, they're pretty spiffy.
Wow. Are you going to have to actually work, or are you just able to relax?
Well, when I mentioned it last night, Sandra, it was because Fancy had called in and said that someone had basically gifted her with a trip on the Lib boat, and that's when I said, "Well, I'm going too. Right. We're going too." But immediately, the chat room, being the absolute incorrigibles that they are, said, "Well, Bob, are you going to do a show every night from that?" No, hell no, I'm not doing no show every night from that. No.
Well, no, you're not allowed to have any sort of vacation. I mean, you need to send the family and stay your ass here.
Yeah, tote that barge, lift that bale.
That's what the gist of it is. You need to tell the chat room to just chill out. You out. You on your way. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Laters.
Yeah, well, no, that's great. Shit, I mean, all those different people are going to be on there, right?
All kinds of people. Alan Grayson's going to be there.
That's what I heard. He had, signed up for that gig.
So, having my kids be able to see all of the stuff they're going to see too is going to be life changing, because it's a pretty monochromatic world here in Appalachia.
The hedonist that I am, I have spent a lot, not in the Caribbean, but in the South Pacific. I know, what do I sound like? But yes, I am a big believer. It's so expansive in the mind. Your kids need to get on, because it's wonderful. The water is like, I can't even describe it. The colors, everything. It's just
the water.
I spent I had a layover in Tahiti. Woo, damn. I don't even know how to even describe what that's like. And so I know the Pacific is different from the Atlantic, but it's still warm waters. And oh, my God, no, you're going to have so much fun.
Well, and the thing is, one of the things that really speaks to me out of this, I mean, it's kind of silly that now in the post-September 11th world, you've got to have a passport to do all of this, but I'm going to have a passport.
Well, yeah, do you have one already? Or you
no, can... I've, no, we've ordered them.
Yeah, is it expedited or something?
Not so far. They said not to worry about it because we gave it in excess of 6 weeks.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, that should be fine. Because I know when they changed some of the rules about it, they had a backlog, but I'm sure that's sorted out now. But listen, that's what I always say. You need that document, so everyone will have one now, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's just sort of a, it's just a good piece. It's a valuable document and everything. So, wow. You guys are going to, I hope you come back.
Dun-dun, dun-dun, dun-dun. No, as pale and white as we are, I mean, I'm not letting anybody out of sight, because I don't want to wind up on Entertainment Tonight. Missing white hillbilly family in the Turks and Caicos.
That's not even funny. Yeah, well, kind of it is, but yeah, I get the gist of it. Hey, so I can't believe that Michael Stu is gone. What's happening? I can't go with that. Damn it! What, he just gave up?
Yeah, he pulled out after the second or third round. He did that whole boxing thing. No mas.
Yeah, well, anyway, they really wanted him gone. A year of that Negro, it was like,
oh, yes.
Uncle, they cried uncle. They were like, yikes.
Oh, in more ways than one, they cried uncle, Sandra. I mean, I'm going to get in trouble early tonight.
Yes, well, there is that, but I don't think he was uncle enough at the end of the day, really.
Speaking though, of that word, have you heard about the book deal that's out for this woman who's going to drop the dime on Slappy Thomas?
Do tell. I missed that.
Her name is Lillian McEwen.
Oh, McEwen. That was the ex-girlfriend?
Yeah, and she's been sort of hinting at stuff, and there's a book deal coming.
Oh, because I know she didn't speak up until her ass got her pension, and she was set. And I said, honey, you know what time it is. So now she's going to do a book?
Yeah, and she says, and now I'm going to type as soon as I get paid. So Titletown Publishing of Green Bay, Wisconsin, that specializes in true crime and inspirational survivor stories, is producing a tome called DC Unmasked and Undressed.
Listen, the thing about it, this is that drunk bitch who did a drunk call. If she hadn't have done that, his wife, I don't think any of this would have happened, but her happy ass thought she would call Anita. And that was like, apparently she came out saying she regretted doing it. I bet you do, you dumbass.
I can imagine. And she told the Washington Post was that Slappy was notorious for inappropriate comments and was obsessed with porn.
Right. Well, yeah. Aren't they all?
It comes with the GOP registration card, right?
I'm just saying, yeah, it just seems to be real common. But, yeah, gruesome. When's that coming out? I might have to, I don't know what. Well, really?
And here's the fun part. Early February.
Oh, shit. Really? I'm sorry. That's soon. What's up?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, go through the portal. Well, once we get the website, just pre-order it at Amazon.com and wait for the to hit the fan.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because, it couldn't happen to a nicer person. Them people are so disgusting.
And what I'm looking forward to out of this is we're going to get actual real-world corroboration of everything that Anita Hill said.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, when that was going down, I thought, oh, yeah, he did it.
I mean, I want to buy a courtesy copy for Arlen Specter. I want to buy a courtesy copy for Orrin Hatch.
Yep.
I want to buy a courtesy copy for all of those right-wing thugs. And just, I don't know, it'll be like that line from Mr. Roberts where, he's underlined all the salacious parts. You know, for easy reading, Orrin, right.
Oh, no, wow, because I know about the woman. I know because she was saying, she was like, wait one damn minute. That's why she had to speak up, because she couldn't bear the lies anymore, and she wasn't under the threat of her career being destroyed. So she thought, well, now's the time. I thought it was interesting, Uncle Tom, I know he's spinning out, because he's a nasty piece of work, so good.
Well, he's so damn conservative, he makes Fat Tony Scalia look like the Justice Brennan.
Well, I know, but yeah, you know how that is. I mean, maybe not so much now, but back in the day, the first questions I would ask my little peeps is like, ooh, what color is the wife? See, we like that. We so wrong. And I said, watch. Sure enough, it's crack. Same with, Ward, whatever his name is, the one who was trying to get rid of affirmative action everywhere.
Right.
His wife popped up, and that was also crack. So there was, there's a sort of, that generation, they tend to marry up, and I put that in quotes. up and away. Anyway.
up the paint chip chart?
Well, no, it's just that certain generation of black men. I mean, it's just, yeah. So all that is not surprising, and of course, I'm sure he had his best of fun with a darkie. need I not go any more into that subject matter, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Sadly, I do. It's just I want this book to come out, and I want them, you know, like you go down into the metro in D.C., and there's always some dude handing out the Washington Post entertainment section or what. Just hand that book out, you know.
Oh, that's going to be great. Hey, listen, so, over in Tunisia.
Yeah, it's a little uncomfortable.
Well, the thing that's really interesting about this is the first Arab leader to come down like this in modern times. Which, you know,
and he's not being brought down by fundamentalist Muslims who think he was too liberal.
Oh no, this is straight. See, what goes on is that you have this whole trend of fake democratic, but they're run by a authoritarian. And when the economy is reasonable, it just sort of moves along. But when the shit hits, well, and this is what happened there. This one kid lit himself on fire because they took his fruit stand away. That was one of the incidents that sort of a catalyzing event, right?
Yeah, I was reading the New York Times story, and it's just...
Oh, no, it's incredible what happened. A lot of sort of, you know, there's a lot of deaths. You know, it wasn't some easy road. You had a lot of people being brutalized. But, you know, good riddance to him. I don't know what's next for that country, but I'm sure the other... dictators are on notice. Egypt really needs to take a quick look at this because Egypt is such a mess, you know.
But see, the problem that always confronts the United States in these circumstances, and I don't think it went away with the fall of the Soviet Union, Sandra, is that, well, what if we get something worse? What if it's somebody we can't control? And so consequently, we wind up backing the wrong horse and making the entire populace of the country in question hate our flipping guts.
Well, I mean, the trend is always towards some sort of democracy, but there's so many gradations of it, especially post-Soviet Union and in Africa. You know, the situation in the Ivory Coast is a really glaring example. It's like, dude, you lost, but he won't go. But instead of people just rolling away like they used to do, they're not, Bob. So it's really... It's sort of encouraging to see.
Oh, no. They don't protest like we protest, you know, where you show up on Saturday and you're gone by Saturday night.
Yeah.
No, they come and they stay.
Mm. No, especially in the last 15 years, it's really been a change. And what's really encouraging in Africa is that you're getting the African Union to back it. So although the man is still there, there's a really good chance that the Ivory Coast will get the leader that they elected. Which is all good. This is good news. I mean, there's,
the business in southern Sudan. I noticed that George Clooney had gone over there, you know, actually being a world citizen and hired satellites.
Yeah, no, that whole plan was very interesting. Yeah.
And it's one of those things that kind of has to happen, because. Well, I mean, you know, look at the Ivory Coast. We see, you may have beat me, but I'm not leaving.
But they will. But the thing is, though, it's time is against that sort of behavior now. That's what I'm saying. The people have a good chance of winning out in that situation, especially if they have the African Union now backing populist movements, unlike they used to back the strong people. I can't even stress what a dramatic shift that is.
Oh, it's tectonic. And the thing out of the Tunisia story is the fact that this is stuff that came out of WikiLeaks.
Well, that was the other thing that I was rolling. I said, yeah, you need to hide the riches. Because when people see that bullshit and they can't eat, that's what time it is. Except, unless you're in the U.S. And I don't, you know, we just roll. But people need to be aware of these huge discrepancy in wealth. I mean, this is... And that other thing I sent you were J.P. Morgan. It's like, hello?
Oh, I know.
I mean, it's like, what the... you know, that is just stunning to me. It's like, really? I mean, how is it justified, you know?
Yeah, how much money?
And yeah, it's, I think it was something like they had $10 billion to sort of pass around.
Yeah, that's...
They had the nerve... to start, they're going to pay dividends again.
Yeah, the headline was J.P. Morgan bankers share $10 billion.
And the anger in England is interesting, that whole Guardian article, because they're like, are you cutting the what out of us? And these people are going to get who? You know.
Right, and what's that verse say? They neither tarry nor do they spin. I mean, you're right in your email. These guys, they're splitting up $10 billion and they don't do nothing.
Yeah, well, they don't do anything. They provide no productive anything. I mean, when you study banks are intermediaries. They are the ones that are supposed to take all. So you're not subjected to asymmetrical information. You or I, as a single whoever, we're trying to get to point A, point B. Now, we don't know everything, but if you go to an intermediary, they will take that risk on. That's all banks are supposed to do. They're
well, and you know, anything. it also goes back, Sandra, to you know what I was taught when I was a little bitty liberal growing up and took my ninth grade civics class, and economics, and you know back when you know I had at least a modest public high school education, and
yeah, me too.
And they taught you about the bank. And sometimes in like fifth grade, there was a field trip to a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd show you how you got your passbook, and you gave them your money, and they kept your money for you, and they paid you a little bit for the use of their of your money, and in turn, they turned that money around and put it to work in the community so that there could be, so that, you know, Bob and Mary Sue could put a new roof on their house. But it don't work like that anymore. I mean, that's a respectable institution that does that.
Right, and if you're going to have a fractional banking system, then you definitely don't want it to be what's going on now, because you're letting the banks create debt. And so if they're going to be able to do that, they need to be a utility. I mean, shoot me down for saying it, but at this point...
You mean a utility like highly regulated public service commission don't get to do nothing without somebody... Right.
Yeah, if they're handling the public's deposits, which they are. I mean, the whole thing is so screwed up, it's beyond belief. Anyway, I was just kind of appalled and sickened that they're going to start paying out dividends again. How dare they?
Well, but if they didn't, Sandra, wouldn't there be a little well-heeled, champagne-tippling shareholder riot?
Well, no, but they hadn't been for 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and so now all of a sudden they feel like the environment is good enough. Have you seen
the... Well, I guess now that President Obama said he's going to be friendly to business.
Well, no, he put one in, you know, I don't even want to go there.
No, I know.
But did you see the home numbers are really like, oh, dear God, you know?
And, you know, there's a
foreclosure.
Yeah, there's a story out there. By the way, Texas Betsy just chimed in and said, in my sixth grade class, it was a trip to the savings and loan.
Yeah.
No, we all got the same shtick, but bank don't mean bank no more.
Not in our room. Yeah.
But this, I found this one. Matt Osborne sent this along to me, and it was kind of hard not to read this real closely, like, from the Chicago Tribune. Did you see this? More banks walking away from homes, adding to housing crisis.
Well, yeah, that trend has to happen, especially with the Midland kind of banks. You know, the too big to fail are sort of tied in with the government, but the middle banks are sort of yeah. Anyway, what's the story?
Well, this is Chicago centric. Mary Ellen Podmolik wrote it for the Tribune, and the subhead says. Research shows 1,896 red flag homes in Chicago appear to have been abandoned during the foreclosure process. So, in other words, they threw the people out, and then they just said, screw it. But here's the fun part. Guess where most of the houses are?
Where?
What the Tribune euphemistically refers to as 1,896 red flag homes, most of them in distressed African-American neighborhoods.
Red flag, red line, red whatever. Good night. Oh, you know what? Wow. So
let's throw the black folks out on the street and let the houses just deteriorate into, because all of that, you know, there was in every one of those houses. I mean, I'm looking at a photo, and we're not talking about a house here that was one of those subprime mortgage classic, you know, new subdivision. No, these are old houses in an old neighborhood, and they've all got steps up to a front porch, a little front porch on the front of the house. They're, you know, single family dwellings. Some of them, you know, are in the process of being re-sided. I mean, we're not talking about anything, Tony. But meanwhile, I click on Chicken Noodle News earlier today, or maybe it was yesterday, and I see them doing this, one of those, you know, girl with her teeth clenched talking, and it turns out there is a shortage of super luxury mansions for sale, and they are being snapped up like fudge-covered popcorn all over the world. And I just thought, you know, why don't you just rub our noses in it?
But it's just incredible. I mean, the numbers are starting to come in for the shopping, too. And, of course, it's just like I imagine. The high-end shopping is, well, nothing hasn't really changed much. But the other numbers, you know, that Walmart is still not doing all that great, since now that's the measurement of 98% of us is how Walmart.
Yeah, Walmart is the new GM. You know, in the 1950s, it was as GM goes, so goes the nation. Well, now, those were good union jobs. Now we're down to a non-union Walmart that teaches its employees how to file for welfare benefits, but still we're at how Walmart goes, so goes the nation.
No, and the CPI numbers are going up, too, and that's not good because it's all going up because of, ooh, the OPEC has decided that we're going to cut output now because we're comfortable with a $100 barrel of oil.
And who wouldn't be?
And it's just kind of like, who does that screw over royally? If we're flirting with $3.50, $4 a gallon again. So, anyway, I don't know. I just am kind of like, yeah. But the other thing I wanted to ask you was, you know, I was tripping when I saw that, oh, yes, let's just mix up the whole Congress for the speech. That is doing my head in.
I wrote back, but it was later in the afternoon because I had some meetings earlier today. I've been following that kind of interested Democratic, what, Senator Mark Udall?
Yeah, Udall again.
Yeah, that's it. That's his idea that we're not going to sit in our party groups. We're all just, it's going to be boy, girl, Republican, Democrat.
Mm.
And I thought, and I saw what you said, you know, what better way to introduce, you know, doing something to Social Security. And at the same time, I was also thinking in terms of, I wonder, and you know, this is one of those credit where credit is due kind of moments, because I had the same sense of the creeps that you did, and I was thinking, well, you know, let's make sure that none of the liberals can have anything to cheer about or boo, and make sure that the progressive caucus inside the House isn't seated together so that they're nice and watered down and nobody will know they exist. But then something else occurred to me, and that's this. Addison Joe Wilson was able to scream, "You lie!" last year because he was safely ensconced among a bunch of his fellows, a bunch of his own. Could this be a subtle way of making sure that nobody can pull one of those stunts again because they might be sitting next to a Democrat?
Oh, and also we have to deal with this. Now, you know I'm wrong to say this, but I can't. The insipid civility business that's being thrown down our throats at the moment. I'm so over that word, I got to tell you.
Well, you're going to love this. I was talking with Dr. Bill earlier today. That's he and I got together to talk about some of this history lecture series that we'll be bringing along in the coming year. And he was telling me he was listening to the right-wing blithering idiot on local radio,
mm-hmm.
and they were talking about civility. And lo and behold, one of the little knuckle walking, mouth breathing, house helmet wearing, oatmeal dribbling boobs that used to call and I'd have to hang up on or shout down or whatever, because they call and they scream at you and then they expect you to say, "Well, thank you for your thoughts." Only they'd never met anybody like me, and I gave them as good as I got. He called it. Remember that Bob Kincaid used to be on in the evenings? He was the most uncivil man I have ever heard. Now, what are we going to do about this fascist, Islamist, Kenyan Muslim?
Well, Well, have you seen anything in the blog of Palego? Have you about this story?
No.
Well, I just wonder. I mean.
Well, I mean, how so? I mean, I've seen mention and stuff, but.
I just wonder. I mean, because I haven't really checked the blogs that I usually look at, but I just think it's a pretty big, you know, it's a pretty big option, and it seems like I've seen where some GOP people are.
GOP, I forget who the guy was, jumped in and said, well, all right, I'm on board with that.
Yeah, and so, you know, of course, because I'm so cynical, I just think, you know, if I hadn't heard the rumors about Obama's direction, you know, I wouldn't be worried about it too much, especially in lieu of this shooting in Tucson. But because I'm concerned about the neoliberal takedown of the rest of the New Deal, I'm sorry. I just look at this as paving the way.
No, it's disturbing in the extreme. And what's more, I have this vision of what you said about civility. The right wing has made clear that they have no intention of ramping anything down, toning anything down. If anything, they're going to get louder and noisier. And this civility business is going to be used as a cudgel to shut the likes of us up.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. That's what I mean. When I'm hearing civility, you know, that's operating in a vacuum because, let's be honest, politics is who gets what, when, and how. And to keep separating it as if it's not all about resources and scarcity and who gets what, winners and losers, sick of it. You know, it's like there's this sort of dishonesty
are. Right, and it's the same thing with all of these right-wing media, for-profit media-owned memes. It's like when the Republicans talk about personal responsibility. That means that's personal responsibility for struggling, working, middle and lower class people. We take the personal responsibility. They, meanwhile, skate on bad debts, proposition people in restrooms, run out on their spouses, do as they please.
And the main thing you should repeat is they are able to restructure their debt anytime they want. I don't think people realize how fucked up it is, and I didn't even want to use that word, but you know, the rich people spend all their time, that's all they ever do is restructure their debt. Whereas us, you're in debt, it's like feudalism.
Well, and see, there was another one of those moments today. I don't know if you saw this business about Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama. I know, you love the voice, don't you?
Oh, yeah, no, and it's so, I just, something really, it's just great. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. It does the same thing to me. He's just out there. I don't know if he took the brown acid or what, but at one point he said he wanted a 10% cut across the board in the budget. Then he said he wants a 30% cut across the board in the budget. It boils down to about $1 trillion in budget cuts across the board. And of course, you know, when a Republican says across the board, he means don't touch the military-industrial congressional complex.
And they still want to cut taxes, too, of course.
Absolutely. But this quote, you got to just sort of sit still with me for a minute. This is a road to financial destruction, Shelby said. No family could operate like that. We continue to borrow instead of cutting spending. The day of reckoning is coming. I honestly believe we could cut 30% across the board. But there's that stupid, sleazy, slimy, dirty, rotten, mendacious lie that a family budget is the same thing as the federal budget.
Unbelievable. Oh, my God, I'm so sick of that. You know what I mean? It's,
With the apocalyptic language, the day of reckoning is coming. Well, the day of reckoning, according to the book that I was raised reading, Sandra, is the time when all the Jews are brought before the returned Jesus, and they say, bow your knee and confess Christ or die, and the Jews say no, and all the happy little fundamentalists get to start slaughtering Jews. That's the day of reckoning that I was taught about. But no, Richard Shelby's got to go. He's got to go use that apocalyptic language.
It's that language. No, you're too right. And also, you know, I understand that Obama speech, and you know, yeah, it was quite good. But I'm just like, what kind of moral imagination do these fools have? And don't try to say it's all the same. My moral imaginations are a hell of a lot different than them folks. Okay, and I hate to go divisive on old Obama, but it ain't gonna work.
Oh, no, I mean, it was...
I love the language, but moral imaginations, yeah, that's very...
Well, I mean, let's look at it from the kindergarten perspective, you know, from the romper room perspective, Sandra. If you've got a child in kindergarten who is sitting quietly playing with her silly putty or her Play-Doh or blocks or whatever and not causing a problem... And you've got an out of control kid with just losing his mind in the corner, about to put a fist through a window, kicking the other students, screaming at the top of his lungs. How much good does it do, Sandra, to look at the little girl in the corner and say, "You behave"?
I
mean, you got yeah. You've referenced your lovely little nieces. I've raised kids. You know, you don't go goon on the one that's behaving.
No. And, I mean, you know, thankfully, these little ones so far are pretty well behaved. Although, speaking of them, I have to tell this story. I'm, like, sitting in the car, you know, I'm driving back, we're chatting. And, you know, of course, they lay me with the, how come the white man shot up Martin Luther King? What? How do I answer that, Bob? I was like, stunned. Because they're eight. You know, they're eight. And the thing is, kids are beautiful because these are, like, they're, like, mixed Mexican black, so they're brown. So when I say, "Oh, black people," they're like, "No, we're brown." I'm thinking, God bless children.
There's hope.
Saying exactly what the hell is going on. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because the construct is in my mind, not theirs. They're like, "What are you talking about?"
Anyway, no, I got a crayon that's black. I don't match.
I don't mean to digress, but I just was sort of, you know, children. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, you know, I have those sort of conversations, and I just want to protect, you know, and think, God, what in the world? What are we doing?
And there is no 5-word, 10-word, 100-word answer for why James Earl Ray did what James Earl Ray did.
Yeah, and it's just sort of, and it's kind of, you know, I really, and it's gotten me thinking. I'm thinking, well, hey, they're eight, and it's sort of, I mean, there has to be a kind of age-appropriate history book. I'm kind of trying to look into it, you know, just because I think, you know, if they're asking the questions, they're kind of old enough to start trying to understand, you know, but how do you direct it, you know what I mean? Anyway, I know this is way...
Well, no, but it's really not, because it goes to, you know, it goes to that so-called dialogue that was opened with the civility stuff and everything. It's not out in left field. It's a legitimate question. And you know, the fact that they said, why did that white man kill Dr. King? Well, you know what? You can't evade the fact that it was a white guy who did it.
It's just, and it's just kind of, you know, with the, because they don't have any sort of...
I mean, do they, at eight, do they know what racism is?
Well, that's the thing. It's just not... It really isn't that palpable. I mean, I see that. I've been to the little classes, and it's also mixed up. And in fact, it's really mixed up, where there's a lot of what I call whatnot. You know, they sort of mix kids. It's just not. But they're learning. You know, they're having a little history, and you know, they learned about civil rights, and it's his birthday coming up. So,
well, it is his birthday coming up. Do you know? Have you seen this story about the incoming teabag governor of Maine?
I'm still stuck on that guy from, I don't know where, the school board guy who is just sort of going on about King and how he's a deviant. That whole guy? Is this something?
No, this is a different racist.
What's this one?
The NAACP invited new Maine governor LePage to attend events either in Portland or Bangor, Maine, or both. And a spokesman said, "We're sorry. but the governor already has personal and professional commitments scheduled for Monday. Really? He's working on a state holiday, is he? And the main director of NAACP, Rachel Talbot Ross, said, "We don't want to misinterpret his intention, but the message we're getting is that we're not welcome and we're not part of the Maine he's preparing to lead." So Governor LePage responded by saying, "The NAACP is a special interest group. They can kiss my butt, and I'm not going to be held hostage by a special interest group."
Ew. Wow. Okay. Well, no, but this speaks to...
That's why our buddy David in South Carolina refers to them as tea crackers.
Oh, God damn. Yeah, no, that really sort of just illuminates exactly what's going on, you know. And in fact, the you know, as long as there are the cracks, Martin Luther King's holiday will never be settled. I mean, every year there's some white people having some spasm about it. It's like, you remember how difficult it was to get the holiday in the first place?
Yeah.
And it's just been contentious.
And I remember Evan Meekum and the miserable business that he started in Arizona because he didn't want anything to do with it.
No, exactly. I mean, so much so that you had Public Enemy and with their song, you know?
Yeah.
I'd forgotten
that.
Yeah, no, that's a good song. They redid it for the recent Arizona outbreak. So anyway, I'll let you go, but the football, you got to give me a little hopes and dreams for this weekend.
Seattle or... Who?
Well, just for the Seattle thing is kind of, that's interesting. I don't like Chicago, so I'll pull for Seattle, but I don't know.
Well, me too, but I got a sneaking suspicion. Seattle used up last year's luck, this year's luck, and probably the next 5 years' luck just getting to where they are.
Maybe Carol is up in Seattle surfing or whatever he's doing, because that was pretty miraculous.
Well, it was, I want to see the Packers beat Atlanta.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, I think, isn't Atlanta their favorite, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're playing under their dome. They're playing in warm weather.
No, but Green Bay look pretty tough.
They've looked real good these last couple of games.
And what about the Patriots? You know, I'm not a fan. What do you think?
I think the only inquiry right now is whether they will score 60 points or not.
Shut up. I know that's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't care how much jawboning the Jets are doing. I look at the Patriots, I'm like, damn it.
No, they're a machine again. They had a couple of off years, and they're a machine again.
It's incredible. I mean, as Brady goes, I understand. It's just kind of, I can't believe them. They're old. I think that Pittsburgh game, that's going to be a slog.
And the battle of the unindicted co-conspirators.
Shut the hell up. Yeah, that game is probably going to be pretty hardcore.
Well, those things always come down to 3 points or less, and I mean, they don't like each other.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't, yeah.
And the Ravens won the last one, so there's a little bit of payback involved. This is a rubber match. That's going to be, At least on the front end, from all expectations, that's the game. That's going to be the bare knuckled, you know, in the trenches, you know, all of that stuff. That's going to be that game.
No, I think that game's going to be real tough. But I also think that Chicago-Seattle, because, see, Jay Cutler, you never know what kind of game you're going to get from that freak.
No, you don't. And the thing is, when he's on, he's on.
He's on. He's good. But when he's not, it's like, yo, who knows? So... I don't know.
In college, his fans just, you know, didn't know how to dress going to the games, you know, for mourning or for celebration. It just depended on who showed up.
So, yeah, he's always been that way during his career, huh?
Well, I mean, you know, come on, Vandy.
Oh, shit, that's right. That's right. Oh, no. Well, anyway, I'm kind of curious about the... Because that's the only team on the West Coast left for us.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, but you got Jim Harbaugh going to the Niners next year.
Listen, hey.
He's going to be a couple of years cleaning up messes.
Well, I mean, they got rid of what's-his-face, as they should, because he was sort of a bit of a disaster.
Singletary?
I guess he had problems. They need to get rid of all those quarterbacks, though, in San Francisco. It's horrible.
But, the big collapse, of course, was San Diego.
What else is new? When are they going to get rid of that coach? It's like, damn, what, is he blackmailing now?
He's got the dirty pictures.
What's happening? Yeah, I don't understand that setup at all, because it's like, they don't keep saying that Norv Turner shit is working. It ain't working.
unless collapsing at the end of the season is part of the definition of working. Well, yeah. I mean,
terrible. But the thing is, I don't understand is how come Al Davis got rid of the wife beater when he was actually winning this time. I don't understand that move either.
You're not supposed to. Al Davis is to the NFL what a really enigmatic Zen monk is to Zen.
No, but ain't he about 80?
90.
I mean,
100. Yeah, I mean, well, you know, he and Bud Adams over in Nashville, they got the same thing going on. After the trip to the potty in the first, right after they wake up, they got 15 rock-solid minutes before the meds kick in. 15 minutes of being as good as anybody on the planet. And then it's, well, oh, yo, you're in minute 16. Well, you'll have to come back tomorrow.
Oh, my God. But, I mean, because you think they do it because they were actually made some inroads this season. It wasn't that bad. And then all of a sudden they fire the coach. I'm like, hello? I don't get it.
Well, I don't know. Maybe Al's got his eye on some, you know, some master plan for some evil genius that he's going to bring in.
Oh, and now one other thing I have to say, then I'll let you go because it's another football. But listen, I see they dismissed, what's his face, the quarterback from Texas. What's his name?
No, I didn't see that. I thought you were going to say ESPN dismissed Ron Franklin.
No. The from the Titans. They got rid of that.
The Titans. Oh, yeah. Vince.
Well, yeah, he might end up in Oakland. Vince. Yeah,
that's where the hard cases go, isn't it?
I guess apparently he only scored 6 on that test.
Yeah, you mean the one that you take at the combines?
Yeah, 6. I was like,
I remember the night that you and I went over the questions that are on that test.
That's scary. Now, when I
yeah, what is your name?
Right. What month is September or a question like that?
Yeah, well, who's buried in Grant's tomb?
No, anyway, so dude ain't too bright from the sound of it.
But he will, well, I guess some of the stories coming out of Texas were that he had to, I mean, it wasn't just enough to give him the thing on his wristband. He had to have, like, little diagrams with circles and arrows and stuff. It was amazing. Oh, but the other thing I saw, since we're doing this, and it's Friday, Have you caught the little Timmy Gebo controversy?
I thought he was their quarterback now. Is that what it is?
No. Remember when he left college and went up to the NFL, the NFL banned Bible verses on iBlack?
Oh. Okay.
Because they knew that little Timmy Gebo would, you know, insist that he had to have a cross and flip-floppians 9-6, you know, 420, whatever, in his iBlack. So they said, no, we're not going to do that. Well, little Timmy's got to get it out there for Jeebus. And so he started, you know, they wear the wristbands that have the plays on them, right? So little Timmy has started writing his Bible verses on his play-calling wristband.
Oh.
And now apparently there's a bit of a controversy, you know, because the NFL will fine your ass for having your socks wrong.
Yeah, no. And plus, I mean, yeah, I thought that was completely inappropriate. That is he going to get fined?
I haven't seen the follow up on it. I just sat there with my little head in my hands, going, "Oh, not again."
Well, isn't John Fox? He's the coach at Denver now, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so is he one of them religious freaks?
I never got the idea that he was.
Oh, okay.
But
I know that guy who used to coach the Colts is some sort of Jesus freak.
Oh, Dungy?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's not just a freak. I remember I was visiting at David in Tennessee's one day, and there was just like this perpetual loop on the local Jesus channel down there
of Tony Dungy's Rules for a Successful Christian Life.
Yeah.
And I mean, they've got radio bits, you know. Hi, it's a moment of inspiration with Tony Dungy. You know, I mean, you can, well, I'm not going to say anything because he had some tragedy in his life.
No, I know, and I mean, it's sort of like the, even when, he just gets on my nerves because they, all these people kowtow around him, and it's just like, hello? And the whole, and when he came out with his, you know, gay hate, and I'm like, oh boy, I'm done with you.
Well, there was that. No, I think for my money, I'm like you, I'm a Michael Strahan fan.
I just like him. Yeah, it's purely.
No, he offers smart commentary.
You know, and he made the right comments, and also, like I say, it's nice eye candy for the women folk out there. And
well, Marty says the rumor is that the Raiders ditched Cable because Al wants to elevate offensive coordinator Hugh Jackson.
Here's the one I
love coming from Marty. There's a rumor that little Timmy Jebo might get traded to Minnesota if McDaniel gets hired to be the Vikings offensive coordinator.
Ew. Oh, God. Their love affair continue, huh?
Oh.
I don't like that. When that Daniels was fired, I was laughing. I said, bye-bye. So now he's popped up again?
Apparently that he's in the running for that job. But then, and I guess... West Virginia's former offensive coordinator, Jeff Mullen, is passing resumes around somewhere for somebody that wants an offense that can't get a first down on third and an inch.
You know what? You need, yeah, no, but ain't that the truth about some of these people who keep getting jobs in the NFL?
You know, you're going to love this. This is a story that you will appreciate. You know, college football is college football because of the absolutely insane devotion that people have to it.
Right.
So I had lunch with Dr. Bill today. And the place where we had lunch, I went in beforehand to wash up, you know, before lunch got there. Went into the men's room. And over there on the towel dispenser. And, I mean, this was nice. It wasn't, you know, somebody with a Sharpie scrawling something. These were carefully cut out letters in adhesive tape. In Mountaineer Gold, that somebody had taken time with, and it must have taken at least, you know, 10 minutes or so to carefully place these adhesive letters on the towel dispenser.
Right.
And it said, fire stew.
Well, ain't that what you want?
Oh, yes. But, I mean, I was sitting there going, my God, when it's showing up in nice little restaurants in Beckley, and it's not in Sharpie, it's, you know... It's been cut out. I mean, that's like management work.
No, but it's like if people could just shift their energies to elsewhere, it's probably what you also are thinking, right?
No.
Oh, no. Well, so but what is the latest on that? I mean, you can wrap it up.
Well, no, I've been waiting for him to say, well, I'm just going to step down. But as it is, no, they've put rules in place where Dana Holgorsen makes every decision about the offense. Makes every decision about the game just about except what color sweater vest the Coach Luther wears. And I think they're going to let him call timeouts, too. And that's about it.
Oh, well.
And it's going to be a season of that.
And then they just shift him on out, right?
Well, no, then he gets a job upstairs somewhere, you know, I don't know, answering fan mail. Now, you're a great public relations man, Coach Stewart, and you know, no, we can't think of anybody who'd be better. There's a big sack of letters over there, and we want a handwritten response on every one. Get busy. And by the way, don't come near the field.
Well, listen, you know, I'm wondering why dude at San Diego State went to Michigan. It's like, are you sure?
Well, Les Miles is apparently not so insane as to take the job himself.
Why would he? His setup down there, I know there's issues, but...
If I was the head coach at Louisiana State University, you couldn't make me leave for a farm.
Well, obviously he didn't. I mean, they must have endless recruiting down there and the whole nine yard, right?
Oh, the statistics a few years old, but you used to think, well, you know, Texas, Florida, you know, a state like that's got to be the one that turns out more Division I football players. Uh-uh. Louisiana.
Oh, Right, right. No, I...
So, yeah, I mean, you can go recruiting, and your recruiting budget is the cost of a tank of gasoline. You know, it's not like being up here and having to fly halfway around the world. Oh, no.
Yeah, well, he didn't go, so I don't know.
And I'm still waiting to see where Plugs Rodriguez lands.
You know, they always land somewhere. That's the thing that's amazing. Anyway, listen, oh, my God, I can't believe this conversation drifted into the endless football.
No, well, we're delightfully shallow, but somebody's got to do it, Sandra.
Exactly. Listen, have a good weekend.
You too. Bye now.
Bye.
Sandra calling from California, and just because I'm in a Front Porch Friday kind of mood, you're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. We're still looking for 25 more members of the Nifty Thrifty 250. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. can't play all of my Jimmy Buffett tonight, but need time for the play. Time for the play. We are halfway through the program for this Friday on the Front Porch edition, this January 14th Friday on the Front Porch edition of The Horn. And you, of course, are welcome to join in, participate in the program as you see fit. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And this message from the American Rents Priebus Association: if your Rents Priebus lasts more than 4 hours, please consult a physician. This message from the American Rents Priebus Association: ending the scourge of Rents Priebus for the next generation. Rents Priebus, it's nothing to be ashamed of. Let's go to the phones and see if there's anybody who actually is still there. No? Okay. And? Okay, there's not. You know, part of the discussion that has centered on the horrors of last weekend has been an attempt on some on our side to have a reasonable and rational discussion, not a debate. What's the debate? It's a discussion about how we address the piss-poor job that this country does in responding to mental health crises. Our college freshman, Cassie at college, we've heard from her this week, with some honest questions about mental health and firearms and the sort of dynamic, if you will, between the two. She sent me a note. She has a blog post up. Her blog is cassieatcollege.com, C-A-S-S-I-E, @college.com. And she wrote asking for some editorial help, and I couldn't get to it in time enough today. And she wrote back and said, I have no patience at all, and hit publish. But she makes some statements and asks some questions. And these are they. We need gun control in the U.S. We need better mental health care in the U.S. We need better health care in the U.S. We need to start preventing mass shootings instead of just crying when they occur. But before we can prevent anything, we have to be able to ask the right questions. Question one. Would you rather live next to a mentally ill person with a gun or a mentally ill person with an appointment at the community mental health clinic? Two, think about the craziest person in your family. Quotes around craziest. We're not trying to be insensitive here. Think about the craziest person in your family. Do you want them in your house overnight with a gun in their hands? Three, think about the stupidest person in your family. Do you want them in your house overnight with a gun in their hands? Four, is there anyone in your family who has ever become senile? Do you want them in your house overnight with a gun in their hands? Now, a new set of questions. One, how much money could we save by paying for mental health care instead of building more and more prisons? Two, when is the right time to ask these questions? And I think the most trenchant question of all is that last one. When is the right time to ask these questions? Because if you ask them immediately after another one of these seemingly endless horrors, remember, we are not calling this a tragedy. If you ask it in the immediate aftermath of one of these horrors, some idiot from the National Rifle Republican Association will say, you're just trying to capitalize on this tragedy in order to advance your anti-gun agenda. When in fact, what we're actually talking about is a pro-septuagenarian granny agenda and a pro-9-year-old getting to be a 10-year-old agenda. But that's not how they frame it, because we don't get to frame things. Remember, we don't get to frame things. The right wing does. So it's obvious that we can't, the right time to ask these questions is not in the immediate aftermath of a horror like the Tucson terrorist attack. So we've eliminated that. There's no way of knowing when the next one is going to happen, so we can't ask it immediately before it, because we don't know when it's going to happen, so that one's ruled out. And any other time that you might ask these questions, as Cassie notes, any other time you might ask these questions are also going to be the wrong time, because there's nothing wrong with law-abiding Americans having them some shooting iron guns and about 100,000 rounds of ammunition each. Because one of these days we're going to have to take our country back. Looky here. Here it is now. We got to take our country back. We can't retreat. We got to reload like Miss Sarah done said. So think about the questions Cassie asked in those terms and understand. Think about it in terms of what I just said. That we are never allowed to ask these questions because we are not allowed to frame the issues. Case in point. Case in point. Remember, Kansas, he's now Kansas governor. He used to be right-wing Kansas Senator Sam Brownback. Well, he is now, sadly for the state of Kansas, poor bloody Kansas's governor. And he holds himself out as a good, upstanding, God-fearing Christian. And he holds himself out as the very model of a... No, do not cue up the Gilbert and Sullivan music. The very model of a compassionate conservative. He's done a little bit to actually merit the appellation, as Think Progress notes. He's been a bit of a moderate on immigration, not that it worked, did anything, and he's worked on some human rights issues. Never could get him to sign on to be an advocate for human rights in Appalachia, though. But he's issued a new budget in Kansas. Because in Kansas, just like in every other state in the union, revenues are going down, needs are going up, and costs are going up. So his new budget just cuts stuff. Among other things, he is lowering state education aid per student to its lowest level since 2000. The year 2000. And he has eliminated wholesale in his proposed budget the Kansas Arts Commission. Because, you know, Kansas doesn't need ballet. Kansas doesn't need music. Kansas doesn't need sculpture. Kansas doesn't need poetry. Kansas doesn't need paintings. Kansas doesn't need an arts commission. I saw the story earlier before the show, and I just, whenever I see arts funding cut, this sick flippy floppy thing happens inside my belly. Because the arts are where we learn how to be human. You can go to church and learn how to be dogmatic. You can go to church and learn how to be faithful. You can go to church and learn how to be reverent. You can go to basic primary education and learn reading, writing, and arithmetic. And how to turn a computer on and off. And how to work in the Windows or Apple or, in some enlightened places, Linux environments. But just about the only place where people have exposure to ars gratia artis, art for the sake of art, is in the public sphere. Because you see, if old ConAgra or Monsanto goes out and buys a Picasso or a Rembrandt or a Van Gogh at auction for their boardroom, little Kansan, you don't get to go look at it. Because you're part of the hoi polloi. And so when you just slash funding for the arts, what you're saying to your fellow Kansans is, your only job on this planet is to eat and excrete and die. Live on hay, day by day, there'll be pie in the sky when you die. Get to it, Kansan. But that's not the worst part of this. I was talking about mental health when I came into this story. In his budget, compassionate conservative Sam Brownback has proposed completely eliminating all funding to the Kansas Neurological Institute by the year 2014. It would completely shut down the Kansas Neurological Institute by 2014. Goodbye. It's over. It doesn't exist. The Kansas Neurological Institute is the critical bridge to well-being for nearly 160 Kansans who have severe mental disability. Two-thirds of those receiving services from the Kansas Neurological Institute can't walk. 80% of the people receiving services from the Kansas Neurological Institute cannot speak. I read that, and my stomach fell further. Than it did with the news of the Arts Commission. And again, remember, Kansas Governor Sam Brownback is a Christian. He's not just Christian. He's pro-life. Pro-life. But he's not pro-life for 160 people, 80% of whom cannot speak for themselves. He is not pro-life for 160 people, more than 100 of whom cannot walk. Just a reminder, not that he's listening, but maybe someone in Kansas is and could ask this question of Governor Brownback to see if he remembers this little passage. From the book of Matthew. Matthew chapter 25. For I was hungered, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungered, and ye gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me not in. Naked, and ye clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee hungered, or athirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister to thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you did it not to one of the least of these, you did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. Now, how much of that you choose to believe is your business. I personally don't think it's about anything in the hereafter. I think it's a lesson about how we treat each other and how we treat the least of these our brethren. Because in another verse in the New Testament somewhere, the shortest verse in the Bible, maybe right after Jesus wept, it says, The poor ye have always with you. In this world, we will never want for people who suffer. In this world, we will never want for people who need. In this world, we will never want for people who hunger, who thirst, who are sick, who are in prison. And the telling question is how we treat them. There's no real challenge in walking up to Governor Brownback and, oh, you're a hail fellow well met. How can I help you, Governor? The question happens when you see 160 people in Kansas, two-thirds of whom cannot walk and four-fifths of whom cannot speak. And you, the compassionate, conservative, upstanding, moral, godly, God-fearing, Jesus-worshipping Christian say, Go to hell! This is the response of Governor Sam Brownback of Kansas to the horror of Tucson. To the horror that happens every day across this country and wherever our military is working, of traumatic brain injury. Because you don't have to be born unable to walk. You don't have to be born unable to speak. There are an abundance of things, including madmen with guns in grocery store parking lots, that can render you that way in the blink of an eye. What's their answer? Governor Brownback says, well, community health services will just take up the patients after we close that KNI boondoggle. Well, it don't happen for free. And no, they're not going to be able to without additional funding coming their way. What does it mean for 160 people? For 160 people, two-thirds of whom cannot walk and four-fifths of whom cannot speak, what does it mean for them to be thrown out on the street? It really means for them to be thrown out on the street because, you see, in Kansas, there is a waiting list, 4,000 human beings long, of people with disabilities who already suffer in silence while they wait for home and community-based services. Inasmuch as you did it not to one of these, the least of these, you did it not to me. Governor Brownback, has anybody told you that among those 160 is Jesus Christ? Because he said, wherever they are, I am. Inasmuch as you did it not to one of the least of these, you did it not to me. I was hungered, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. Naked, and you clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and you visited me not. I say unto you, inasmuch as you did it not to one of the least of these, you did it not to me. And these shall go away. Let's read. And Governor Brownback shall go away into everlasting punishment. And this is the crowd to whom we are supposed to be more civil. This is the crowd about whom we're not supposed to say anything untoward. This is the crowd. This is the crowd that considers themselves our betters. This is the crowd that says, we didn't do it. It wasn't us. Lord, when did we not give you what you needed? All the time realize, I don't want my hard-earned money being took away for no damn welfare. Come on, Vera. We got to get to church. Damn them. No, not damn them. For they have already damned themselves. Haven't they? Rather seems to be to me that they have. Does it to you? Breathtaking. Breathtaking when you confront it right up front, what the right wing really, really are. They say they're pro-life, but they won't even take steps to keep little girls from being gunned down in parking lots. All they want to say is, it's inexplicable. No one can understand why it happened. No one knows the mind of God. You know, if I was God, I'd be a little bit pissed off at getting this stuff palmed off on me when it could easily be cured by human action. Right? But God gets the credit for winning touchdowns, and God gets the blame when people radicalized by fevered, hate-filled right-wing rhetoric start shooting up our public spaces and our public. So jump in on the conversation if you want to. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-4-HEAD-ON. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
When your day is long,
slide. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
The following message is brought to you by the American Rents Priebus Association. Rents Priebus disease is a disease that is easily contracted in the fetid fluids of right-wing Kool-Aid. If you drink right-wing Kool-Aid, the Rents Priebus worm can enter through your alimentary canal and slowly snake its way up to your brain, where it will consume it entirely, leaving you a shattered shell of a human being and little more than a zombie for the orders of the right wing. If you are offered a cup of Kool-Aid by a right-winger, don't drink it. It is probably crawling with Rents Priebuses. This message brought to you by the Rents Priebus Association. Curbing the rising tide of right-wing zombies every day. Rents Priebus Association, rentspriebus.org. 6 minutes coming up on 7 past the hour here on this Friday on the Front Porch edition of The Horn. I'm Bob, of course. Jack writing in from Shreveport. In the midst, when do we ask about mental illness versus mourning victims? In the midst of the right denigrating the conversation of the topic of why the Tucson shooting occurred, rather than only mourning the victims, I would pose the following question. If we were to delay the questioning of why until the proper mourning period was observed, would the current state of the news cycle allow the expression and discussion of the question of why after that delay? Additionally, what would the proper amount of mourning time be? However, that is a somewhat arbitrary number. It's not arbitrary at all, Jack. The proper amount of time for mourning before we actually talk about the substantive issues surrounding one of these horrors is forever. Remember how Dim Leader wouldn't allow anyone to see a casket coming home from the war he started in Iraq? Ever? Right. Yeah. And this in from Kate. I've just walked into the middle of the mental health questions versus prison questions. If one looks back in the cycles of history, it is evident that sick and differently abled folks are disposable. There won't be any more mental health facilities. Reagan took care of that. When has this happened in the past century? Those passages, meaning the Matthew 25 stuff, those passages you just read are not necessarily Christian. Well, actually, that passage was. It's from Matthew chapter 25. But Kate notes those moral codes are universal. And they are. I just don't have it to hand to read it from the Quran, or my New Testament's better than my Old Testament, so I can't read it from any of the Jewish holy literature, and I don't have the sutras or the Rig Veda or the Bhagavad Gita to hand. It's in all of them. All of them. Hell! It's the central tenet to Bill and Ted's excellent adventure. Dude, be excellent to each other. Huh? But Kate notes, it is easier to be a teacher and a role model than an argumentative because they took away our arts in school. I probably need some elaboration on that, Kate. The sick and the lame, says Kate, are disposable, not just in Kansas. Just last month, 160 folks slept outside in Montana, some sick, some lame. We have a big job ahead of us. Liberal arts that went the way of the study of government, civics, and history in our education system. It is up to we who have the knowledge to pass it on to those coming behind us. All that we know about music, about literature, including the classics, drama, and poetry, since the government took it away, it's up to us who know to pass on the knowledge. Chaos is always self-corrected. See, there's one little bone of contention in that, Kate. The government didn't take it away. There's lots of us who supported that kind of teaching. The government didn't take it away. The Republicans took it away. The Republicans are not the government unless we lay down and allow them to simply have it. That's what scares me about all of this civility nonsense. Because as the right wing ramps up its incivility inexorably, the only note of incivility will be coming toward us. Oh, look at that, Bob. He's just mean. I assume many of you have heard by now the fact that the BBC used Mike Malloy as the example of what's wrong with American rhetoric. No clips from Glenn Beck, no clips from Michelle Malkin, no clips from the Savage Wiener, no clips from Pastor John Hagee screaming, "Starve!" Only a piece of satire about Glenn Beck from Mike Malloy. See how it works? That's how it works. It really, really is. 11 minutes past the hour, a note coming in from Andy. Mr. Bob, I know Mr. Obama will never recognize the greatness of Franklin D. Roosevelt and his regard for those who have too little. Instead, Mr. Obama regales in Ronald Reagan's supply-side tax-cutting policies of giving more to those that have much, too much, and providing nothing back to the society that created them except more pain and suffering. Thus, the following quote from Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Test of our progress is whether we provide enough for those who have too little. Andy says, our generation has failed the test. Tunisia may be our model of the future unless the people get their act together and find another Roosevelt. William writing and says, exactly what are the working or rather non-working class heroes supposed to think? We are battered daily with conflicting good and bad news of job growth. Without actually seeing the growth, then I assume there is little to none. As far as mental health care is concerned, back in 2004 and well before that, it was provided through the medical group plan at work, HA work. 10 visits per year with $10 copay and walk out with a crash test dummy script med. Out of all the shrinks I saw to deal with panic and anxiety attacks, one was listening, and due to a provider change, he was not on the list. He even saw I was at my 10th visit and offered just to take the $10 copay and forget the rules. A rarity, to be sure, says William. And, you know, that's the thing about the job growth. I saw a segment on the electric altar the other day that said, where are the jobs? Why, the jobs are in Minneapolis, and the jobs are in Chicago, and the jobs are in Houston. Oh, look at the jobs. And so I suppose people are just supposed to pack up and go to Houston or Minneapolis or Chicago on hope. Saying something like that, doing a newsreader like that, it could just as easily be replaced in the for-profit media by a 5 kilohertz tone. Right?
Right.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Rhys Priebus, the lost Doctor Who villain from Tom Baker's Doctor Who, and also Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah, there's something science fiction about Rhys Priebus, isn't there, David?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there is. I believe I was
Or Rhys Priebus and his faithful trout Sparky.
There you go. It'll be interesting to see what happens with this guy, how long he lasts, and so forth. But I wanted to talk about the Tucson shooting, and I have a different take of it, and I believe we're going to be agreeable, disagreeable discussion or something,
okay,
somewhere along that line. First off, I don't think the shooter was right winger. I think he was an isolated person who was a creature of YouTube. I noticed nobody's reporting what his favorite film is, and that makes me think that a lot of people are missing that. Did you know what his favorite film was that he watched over and over and over again?
Brazil, Eraserhead?
Nope, Zeitgeist.
Oh, not that.
yeah.
Oh, God, I just said, oh, not that, so I'm going to get a bunch
of... And he loves Loose Change.
Oh, really not that.
Yeah, but here's the thing about it, Bob. I mean, the thing to understand about that is that those are considered of the left documentaries, even though they may be libertarian bent. They're kind of hard to decipher.
Well, see, that, you know, you make a very good point, David. I was just sitting there watching all the currency business and the gold and silver business and the conscious dreaming business, and I'm sitting there thinking, man, this guy has spent way too much time listening to Alex Jones.
Well, you know, the conscious dreaming thing is from Waking Life. If that's the Richard Linklater, and I'm sure he was influenced by that movie as well. But my point is that I read a bit on the guy. He was an avid 24/7 gamer, really, really into the whole subscriptions. I forget what games he was playing, but he really immersed himself in that world. The other thing that people need to understand is this. And this is something that's missing in the news that they need to connect, Bob, because this is important. They keep mentioning on right-wing radio, and I listened to a little bit of it, and I hope the horn listeners need to understand how this works, this framing works. They keep saying he was on marijuana when really that wasn't the case. He was on salvia. Now, when you're
I wondered about that.
Now, when you're on salvia, Bob, and when you're insane or you are at the cusp of all of this paranoid and conspiracies and just everything flooding your mind, it makes it just that worse. Now, nobody's coming out and saying that he wasn't on salvia, but this is important, people. The fact that they keep saying marijuana is another trigger reference of saying marijuana is dangerous and it's negative and it influences shooting, which really what they should be saying...
It's 2011's answer to 1930s reefer madness.
Right. And the other thing that people need to, I think they need to understand about this guy is the fact that, again, he was immersed in the world of YouTube, and he was just a... You know what it was, Bob? Here's the thing. His favorite person he looked up to was Heath Ledger's The Joker. I don't know if people knew that, but that's true. Now,
oh, this is just getting weird.
I know, but it is getting weird. But you see, the thing is that if you can't be a hero and you're a loser, your last resort is to be a villain. I'm sorry, people. That's the bottom line. If nothing's going well in your life, and he was complaining on those. I don't know if you heard about this. He was complaining on message boards over and over and over again about how he couldn't get how he couldn't get a job. And, I mean, he said, yeah, I sent in 60 applications, and, I mean, he was really, I mean, he was one of those types that would just, you know, wake up at 3 hours and post a message and then wake up another 3 hours and post another message on a different forum and just keep going. And I guess my problem with the whole Tucson shooting, and this is something that I noticed that people need to understand, is that when the Bush years were happening, I paid a lot of attention to a lot of the signs, and a lot of there were websites out there that nobody paid attention to, and there was also this sense of high vitriol to Bush that was so far away from being political. I mean, it was more than personal. And people who didn't even study Bush, they were constantly going on tears. And what I mean to say is, let me say this, Bob. This is one of the points I wanted to make. You know, there was a movie called Death of a President, and it came out. Now, that was a mockumentary on the assassination of Bush.
And there was an absolute purple polka-dotted blue scream and hissy fit.
What I'm saying is, if this came out during the same time, and it was based on Obama, they would consider it racist. What I'm saying is, there's this tendency when something comes out that is something so far-reaching and so controversial for a gimmick or whatever, we instantly go to it's being racist or it's completely never been done before. It's unprecedented, and it's so much hatred. But I guess what I'm saying is that I personally think that we need to be careful in this respect, because it's gonna be coming from our side, Bob. I know that. I know that for a fact. It's on its way. And there's nothing you can do about it, and there's nothing I can do about it, because it's being built right now. The resentment. And if you look at the media, the way the media is playing it back and forth like a ping pong match. I mean, and I know how you say we need to get rid of the eliminationist rhetoric and that, but really, the way it's played up in the media, you know, the way we get these images, these cutback images back and forth, and just how everything is flashing by us constantly, and the way the media is just revving us up constantly. You know, one of the things that I think that they should have done when they covered the shooting of Tucson, and I think a lot of people would agree with me, instead of showing that shooter's face, what they should have done was they should have showed a mosaic of the people who were killed. Don't make that guy a hero, and don't make him a martyr. What they should have done was keep focus on the people who were killed in that massacre. That's what they should have done. But they didn't do that, Bob, and that's for an obvious reason. We like revving up, and we like incubating as it is villains.
Well, there's an element of masturbation in it where the for-profit media are concerned, David.
Right.
Because what happens is, they immediately declare that the shooter was insane, even mm-hmm. though there is no diagnostic differential diagnostic evidence yet. Even though nobody's run him down the axes from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, 4th edition. None of that's happened, but the for-profit media is always, wow, clearly he was deranged. And after they do that, they move into nobody can understand why this happened. And then they start putting on speculative guests to speculate about why this happened.
Right.
And it's all designed to reinforce the randomness and the inexplicability, and no one can know the mind of God, you know, all of that stuff that was in Obama's speech,
right.
No matter how moving it may have been.
Mm-hmm.
And so we walk away and go, shit happens.
Yeah.
And then it happens again, and lather, rinse, repeat. The for-profit media treat it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's shit happens. Never, ever, ever addressing the two principal questions. Not, well, you know, I look for their politics because I think that the right wing has a murder problem.
Right.
But the two principal questions are, if the guy is indeed mad, why don't we have a mental health system that can address some of these issues? Because we know that it's not impossible to have because other countries have them. And the second one is, of course, firearms. You know, I saw, I guess it was last night, I saw clips of the member of the House who has been on a multi-years-long effort to deal with these mass quantity clips. And her advocacy began with the shooting on the Long Island Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, there is no one here who will say that not having that clip would have prevented all the deaths and all the woundings. But in the case of this shooter in Tucson and the Long Island Railroad shooter, they would not have killed as many. And that's a legitimate point. As is the point, because, you know, one of the immediate, see, the minute one of these things happens, the PR department at the National Republican Rifle Association goes into overdrive.
Yeah.
You know, they sit there hard by I-66 out in Fairfax County, Virginia, and I imagine a whole floor is nothing but how do we respond to these murderers. And they go into overdrive talking about how, you know, oh, you want to take away our guns. Well, the fact of the matter is, if Jared Lee Loeffner walks onto the parking lot of the Safeway with a claymore or a rapier,
mm-hmm,
or a dagger or a cudgel or a javelin or, mm-hmm, a ball bat and starts swinging, it's the same argument as it is with the 30-round clip. He's going to do some damage, probably, but he is not going to do nearly as much damage. And yet we can't seem to have that, because, I mean, I've seen it on my own Facebook page. You know, well, why you got to come after me? I'm a law-abiding gun owner.
Yeah.
I'm not coming after you. I'm asking you simply to acknowledge that your fascination with firearms has a direct and proximate relationship to little 9-year-old girls not getting to be little 10-year-old girls. That's not that difficult, is it? And I also got taken down the road for saying it is more difficult to get a fishing license than it is to buy a handgun in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is, it's true. It's also more difficult to get a fishing license in West Virginia than it is to buy a handgun. It's more difficult to get a fishing license in Alabama than it is to buy a handgun. And that's why so many of these states, states like Virginia, are states where people who are actually bent on doing grievous harm in society, be they the drug cartel or gang warfare or whatever, they send people to states like West Virginia, Alabama, Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, to buy guns. Mm-hmm. And they are bought and sold legally to so-called law-abiding gun owners. And then they go elsewhere and are put into the hands of non-law-abiding gun owners. And even if legislation is put forward to curtail that practice, the NRA says, no, we must have more dead 9-year-olds. And that's where all of this sort of begins and ends, because the National Republican Rifle Association will never voluntarily give up their power. And the people who support the National Republican Rifle Association, since they are not losing the 9-year-olds, will never stop sending in their dues. And what's more important, Sturm Ruger and Winchester and Remington and Glock and all the other manufacturers will never stop paying their dues. And see, the NRA gets tons more money from gun manufacturers than it ever gets from member dues. You know, David in South Carolina just pointed out that in South Carolina, because of the scourge of meth, it's more difficult in South Carolina to buy cold medicine than it is to buy a gun.
Do you think we will ever see gun advertising back on mainstream television?
Absolutely.
Wow. You said that without even flinching. I mean, do you think that's one of the first things that's going to, even though the gun sales have never been higher? I mean, that's the other thing. They don't want to kill these gun sales, Bob. They want them to keep going and going and going constantly. The investors are now demanding.
Well, let me qualify my answer. Absolutely, if the gun lobby decides they want to advertise.
Yeah.
If they decide they don't need to advertise, which they don't, they won't. Why waste the money? But on most cable subscriptions, there's a hunting channel.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And the hunting channel has a lot more programs about, look here at this pistol. My God, it's got a 30-round clip. You know, and it's about guns and not hunting. Look at all the magazines that proliferate. Guns and ammo. The pistol pack and mama. They're all over.
Mm-hmm.
If I walk into the local cut-rate drugstore down here,
right,
there will be one fashion magazine, there will be one sports magazine, five bodybuilding magazines, one copy of Rolling Stone, and three dozen different magazines about guns.
Yeah, I live right next to, I live three doors down to a gun shop, and every single day I always see someone come in and come out with more handguns. It's always somebody different, and I always think to myself, they are definitely not going hunting. People just love buying guns, and it's...
No, when you're coming out with a .380 caliber semi-automatic that'll fit in your boot or in the palm of your hand, no, you're not going bird hunting with that. And you're not going deer hunting, and you're not going target shooting either.
Even with the rifles and the crazy ass theatrical scopes that they have on them now, and they try to convince people that, oh, I'm going hunting with this. And see, this is a problem, though. This is a nightmare scenario we've created for ourselves. That now that guns are bigger and better than they've ever been, and now that it's on the paranoia is stirred up to a level that the NRA is just giddy about. They're gonna want to keep this paranoia and this fear level high.
Fear and paranoia and hate are always the handmaidens of the right wing in any society. You know, but the thing is, I try to be rational about this.
Yeah.
I'm willing to have an informed discussion about this because, you know what, I'll concede a lot. I'm a hillbilly. I will concede a lot of ground on firearms. I've got them within arm's reach of me right now, David.
Right.
One is a .45 caliber semi-automatic pistol. It holds six in the clip plus one in the chamber.
Right.
The other is a 12-gauge short-barreled pump-action shotgun, 12-gauge.
Mm-hmm.
Those two firearms will address any problem I may have that needs remedying by a firearm. Okay? The shotgun I got specifically for home defense and for varmints. On the home defense front, the beautiful thing about a pump-action shotgun is it makes a real interesting, distinctive noise when you rack one into the chamber.
Mm.
Shh, you know, and it's loud. And that thing that's a universally recognized sound. Anybody who hears that is going to turn around and go the other direction. The handgun I have from a previous life. But you know, really, I understand.
Yeah.
I've lived in places where it would take 45 minutes to get a cop to my door. It makes some sense to have a firearm. I'll get letters saying no, it doesn't.
Mm.
But you know, West Virginia has a real rabies problem. There's several reported in this county every summer.
Right.
And you know what? When old Fido's down at the lower half of the yard coming your way,
mm-hmm.
animal control can't get to you. And there are people who work perfectly normal jobs, and their job is at 2 o'clock in the morning to take the day's, the evening shift's receipts and drop them in the night deposit box at the bank.
Mm-hmm.
if that person feels like it's warranted to have a pistol, a handgun, you know what? I'm not going to argue with them about it because it might be. And folks from other countries can say, well, you know, we have people go to the night deposit drop box at 2 o'clock in the morning without any problem. But you know what? They're not going in the United States where everybody has a gun. The good guys have a gun. The bad guys have a gun. Everybody has a gun. You know, in Florida, it is the law of that state that you can shoot someone if they make you nervous. You don't even have to be in your house.
Right.
You know, before we get on the lib boat, we're going to, you know, it leaves from Fort Lauderdale.
Right.
And, you know, we flew to Vegas last summer, and I explained to the kids that the most serious place in the United States right now is an airport. Mm. And we go politely and quietly through security. And we don't make it, you know, we say hello, we say yes, sir, we say no, sir, we say yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. And we do, you know, because these are nervous people doing a shitty job. But this time through, we're going to land in Florida where they can shoot you for talking funny. And I'm going to have to sit down and give the kids the no sudden moves lecture again. Because it's Florida. And they can kill you for sounding like a hillbilly in Florida, and they will be able to present that at their criminal trial as an affirmative defense. Well, he didn't sound like we sound down here. I killed him. And that, you know, that's the nefarious part of it, and that's the discussion I want to have if I ever have one. I've given up talking to right-wingers.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, is there no middle ground? Can we say that there's no American out there who needs a tank, a bazooka, or a grenade launcher? Can we say that?
I don't know, Bob, because...
Well, the NRA says the answer to my question, David, is no, we cannot say that.
Oh, they want to sell one, though.
Right. They want to sell them.
They just can't wait to sell that. They would like to sell the District 9 plasma cannon that you hook to your flesh.
I know.
But it doesn't exist. But the other thing I wanted to mention real quick was I heard about this, and it was regarding Sam Cedar, and one of the guys actually retracted his contribution for the month, and he said he wouldn't be able to subscribe because I guess in California they're retroactive payments for Medicare now, and they billed him a big amount, and he's going to have to. And he said he's going to go hungry for. for many months on end, and it's crazy what's happening with Medicare now.
Well,
like, wait a minute. So all of the months that this just started now, they're going to make him pay for it. It's like, oh, it's like going back in a time machine. You missed all these months, so you're going to have to pay for that now. And he's on disability too. I mean, the nightmares never end, Bob.
No, that much is true. They don't, David. They just don't.
But with that, I do have to chime in and say that's great news on the cruise, and I hope you and your family you have a wonderful, positive, uplifting experience, and you guys get to.
I don't see how it can't be. Knock wood.
I can't see how that is either. Yeah, that's about it.
All right.
Well, Bob, as always, great talking to you.
It's a pleasure, David. You take care.
All right, later.
Bye now. And you know, if you, there are people who don't get firearms. And like I said, I've got a history. And firearms were never discussed. My father never took me hunting. You know, all of those things that qualify as a good Southern, many of those things that qualify as a good Southern upbringing, I never had. I never fished. I never hunted. I never skinned anything. My wife, Ellie Mae, did, though. But there came a time in my life when it was necessary for me to learn about firearms. And I did. And there came a time in my life when it was necessary for me to have firearms in my home. And I still do. And if you want to, I mean, and some people, I mean, the reality is as I've described it. We're going to keep having Tucsons because we are a gunned-up culture that has not even 10 cents worth of interest in keeping guns out of the hands of people whose grasp on reality is something less than tenuous. But if you want to make sure that no redneck ever even has a remote possibility of voting for a liberal or a progressive, go ahead and talk about a general nationwide ban on firearms. Do that. Tell me how it works out. I despise them. I do. Because I know that if I ever have to pick one up and use it, it's going to be to kill either a rabid animal, something threatening my children, or another human being generally, as an act of self-defense. And I cannot stand the thought of killing a person with, or an animal with my car, with my bare hands, with a yard rake, with a hoe. Lord, the number of southern grannies I've seen take apart copperheads with a sharp hoe. That's H-O-E, hoe. Can't tell you. Oh, it's a brutal thing to behold. I don't like to kill stuff, let alone people. But I live in a place where for me not to have a firearm would be stupid. Cops can't get here in time. And the only thing they could do would be to draw the chalk outline. And I will not subject my family to that kind of risk. Even if it's just a rabid skunk. So, there's a way to have this discussion, and there's a way not to. Just saying. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
When I first came to this area, one of the leading stories concerned a father and his two sons, and they were all under some type of mental health care, and they'd gone hunting. And these people should never have been allowed to have had guns by any
competent authority.
Competent authority is specified by the ATF. And they ended up killing each other, all three of them. They got into a regular Dodge City type thing, and there it was, all three of them dead.
This state, Jim, is rife with stories of men who were seeing other guys' wives and went out turkey hunting in the spring when camouflage is the name of the game.
Right.
And in this state, we allow rifles to be used in turkey season, which is just insane.
Of course it is.
But, you know, lo and behold, Rompin' Wrigley winds up dead in the bushes. And the only penalty that can be ascribed if you can find the shooter is not more than a year in the county jail for killing livestock, animals, or other or human beings.
Caught by a stray round.
Yeah. Well, I seen the bushes over there, Riglin. The worst that'll happen is the guy will go to jail for a year and lose his hunting license forever.
Well, that too. Yeah, absolutely. And going back to the mental health care issue, in South Carolina, they have completely decentralized all mental health care facilities. And in Columbia, there's a place called the State Hospital. And it was designed by Robert Mills, you know, the famed architect.
Yes.
who did the maps and things in the Capitol. They've thrown all those people out of there, and now they're making it again to condos.
Dear Jesus.
There are. And these people have been thrown on the streets with no supervision, no care, no caring, no compassion. And then they get all upset when one of them goes berserk and does something bizarre. I simply do not understand it. The lack of compassion and the lack of responsibility.
Well, I can't understand why we... No, I can't understand, Jim. I get a little bit nervous about databases. You know, I go to the store and they say, give me your phone number, and no. They say, well, it's just so we can keep track of your rewards. I said, I'll just keep paying retail. I don't want to be in your database.
Oh, I don't blame you.
I'm cranky that way. You know, I remember when they tracked down a book during the Lewinsky scandal. I'm real sensitive about database issues. But dadgum, Jim, we maintain a database of known felons and criminals, right?
Supposed to.
Yeah. Why can't we have it cross-referenced so that known felons and criminals and other people who are legally not allowed to have a firearm can't have one? Because remember, the guy in Arizona was sold the firearm sometime last year, and all he did is walk in, plop down the money, and walk out with the firearm.
Well, that's true. In addition to that, you have people who are going to procure a firearm, legally or illegally. They're going to file the serial number off of it, that type of thing. You know, if you want a gun, it's there for anybody to get, and they can get it if they're willing to plunk down the money. Go to a gun show. How much control is exercised over firearms that are exchanged at gun shows and things of that nature?
Do you remember the story of the guy who shot up the Pentagon metro station?
I sure as hell do.
You remember where that gun came from?
A gun show, I believe.
It was bought at a gun show, but it was sold into the stream of commerce by the Memphis, Tennessee Police Department after the firearm had been no longer had any use in the evidence locker. Tennessee law allows them to sell the firearms. Because, you know, who wants to raise taxes to support the police department when they can just make sure that another damaged human being can get their hands on it and shoot up a metro station?
Well, that's just incredible because, you know, there's no, you know, I don't understand the lack of custody of something, of a machine whose purpose is to throw bullets.
Well, it used to be that those firearms would be treated the same way that confiscated drugs were. You have a big fire. You render them, you know, it's easier to burn marijuana and cocaine than it is to burn a firearm, but you can melt the barrel, you can render it unable to ever be a firearm again.
Well, they have these places where they do this with guns that are confiscated from, you know, like drug busts and things like that.
But that doesn't happen anymore, Jim, at least not in the South.
Well,
they're sold to gun dealers. They are literally, the Memphis Police Department, the Birmingham Police Department, the Nashville Police Department, they have firearm auctions at which lots of seized and confiscated firearms are sold to the highest bidder.
With no other qualifications other than putting your money down.
And breathing.
Well, that's just absolutely crazy. So I've certainly seen my share of what guns can do and what they can do to people. And, you know, for people just to buy them just to have the latest type of scope or the latest starlight scope that can vision at night and things of that nature. I mean, you know, there are gun collectors and things of that nature. I mean, I have a pistol in my home. Yes, I do. But it's not for anything but for what you use yours for or would use yours for. And I just don't understand this. Well, yes, I do. I understand to the point of too well understanding the gun type of mentality and the effect that it has upon people.
Well, there's that, but also, Jim, in the culture in which you and I live, firearms are a more liquid asset than diamonds. I mean, I know people who live in this state who have great big gun safes full of exquisite firearms. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, Belgian side-by-side double-barreled shotguns that run for $10,000, $12,000 a pop, if not $20,000.
That's big money in this stuff, man.
And the thing is, if you're up against it and you got to raise some capital, you can raise it faster with that shotgun than you can with your wife's diamond.
Oh, yeah. Definitely a more viable commodity for most people.
And I fear that, you know, maybe one of the purposes this program serves is to give little glimpses of that reality into places where that is just inconceivable.
Bob, there's so many things that are happening now to me that are so inconceivable that even when I get on this program, half the time, sometimes I don't feel like I make sense.
David just wrote from your native South Carolina, Jim, and he said the firearm background check in South Carolina now is self-reporting. There's a check. There's a box you check off that says, "Are you a convicted felon?" There's another box you check off about, "Are you a fleeing felon?" And another box about having been adjudged insane. And if you click no and sign your name, you walk out the door with the firearm.
Don't they have any kind of three-day waiting period?
No, that's all gone. That was gone because Bill Clinton was trying to attack our basic freedom.
And so now you have people who think they can bring a firearm into the House of Representatives or the Senate and come in there like they're going to the OK Corral, right?
Louis Gohmert has promised to introduce the legislation.
That's the craziest damn thing I've ever heard of in my life. Why in the name of God would somebody need...
Well, I'm not trying to be contentious, Jim, but that's not the craziest damn thing you've ever heard. The craziest damn thing you've ever heard is going to be when it passes by overwhelming majority in both houses and Barack Obama signs it into law. Mark my words.
Knowing fully well what these weapons can do, I cannot understand why any clear-thinking person, even if it should reach the president's desk, why he would sign something like that.
Well, he's running for re-election, and he doesn't want the NRA on his back about being insufficiently dedicated to the Second Amendment. I mean, here. You want? I mean, just to have a, and I know you've got problems with Barack Obama, and I got problems with Barack Obama. But let me give you a sense of what it is he's up against. You know, I've talked in the past, Jim, about these bizarre right-wing guest pitches that I get.
Oh yeah.
Well, I have one in the stack today, where Barack Obama is being vociferously criticized at full voice by the right wing because of the Obama State Department policy of changing U.S. passports. You want to know what the change is?
Please, sir, tell me.
Sitting down? Yeah, I know. The change is that formerly on passport applications, when you went to apply for a passport for your child, and I recently went through this, the form used to say, father, mother. Okay? Now the Obama administration State Department, according to this right-wing press release, wants to change it to parent one and parent two. And see, that just shows how they're undermining that Obama, that fascist, communist, Kenyan Muslim. He's undermining our traditional family values. Cause Stevie might have two mamas. And it's just another step in the shameless communist attack on the sanctity of the holy institution of merge. Now, if they'll attack him over that, can you imagine what would happen if he said that if he vetoed a bill passed by a majority of both houses of Congress in which they said they wanted the right to carry guns into their own houses?
Well, my point is they need to reinstate gun control. They need to reinstate three or however long it takes waiting period before a person can acquire a firearm like that. And that includes criminal background, psychiatric background, all this other stuff, you know? I mean, there were controls in place to limit this, but you say they've been removed. And to me, that's just totally irresponsible.
Well, they have been, but Jim, let me tell you a little secret about the background checks back when they had them. You were supposed to fax the document, and it was usually the county sheriff. Fax the document to the FBI or the National NCIB or whatever.
ATF.
And then in 7 days' time, you had to have a response back.
They were supposed to do a background check or, you know, NCIS type thing.
Well, guess how that usually worked. And I saw this in more than one office. The sheriff positioned his fax machine so that when the paper came out after he'd faxed it, it would fall immediately into the trash. And the faxes that came back from the background check also fell immediately into the trash.
Never were examined or anything like that. Right?
Not at all.
Probably went from the trash can into the shredder.
Yeah.
Or burned up in the fireplace or whatever. Or somebody used it for toilet paper. Yeah, I believe it. Sure do. I'll tell you, it's the damnedest thing in the world. The proliferation of firearms and the diminution of mental health care services. You add those two components together, and it's not going to be a very pretty situation.
It's not going to be very long before the next Tucson.
That's right. Exactly. Like I say, these things are not linear, they're cyclical. And that's just the way it seems to be going. I tell you, it is just absolutely nuts.
It doesn't give you a great deal of confidence.
Well, you know, I can remember, and I'm going to get off here because your show's about over. After the shootings of Robert Kennedy and Dr. King and things of that nature, there was a focus put on this type thing of the Dodge City mentality. And there seemed to be some response to it, as to keep these weapons out of the hands of people who would misuse them. But all that's gone away.
Yeah. And because no elected representative, never mind the religion industry, no elected representative wants to go up against the NRA.
Well, that is indeed regrettable. Well, listen, thank you for your time.
My pleasure, Jim. You have a good weekend.
And same to you, sir.
Bye now. And I'm sorry for the blinking lights that I didn't reach tonight. We will start over again on Monday. A gentle reminder, we are looking for 25 members of the Nifty 250, Thrifty 250, to help us make the fundraising goal that ends tonight at midnight. Second gentle reminder, tomorrow, Saturday, January 15th, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you will be able to watch and or listen to the memorial service for Judy Bonds right here on the horn. John Fox tells me he will have the Ustream player embedded on the static horn page that's there at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com right now. And barring that, you can also go to ustream.tv and search The Horn, T-H-E-H-O-R-N, all one word. Thanks, everybody, who has made all of this go. Thanks for putting up with all of us during a hectic, technically hectic week. The podcasting will get back to normal, I am told. It just may require a little bit of patience. Thanks go out, as ever, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. You will hear tomorrow why I say they are the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, well, wait, Rick Smith's coming up live for the end of your Friday night. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.